Everybody, get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like GEICO is more than just a company that can save you money. GEICO also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost her seat, and she don't know where to find them. Go!
GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Hello and welcome to this very special edition of the Back Nine Report. Today we will have our season ending show. Yes, it's the season ending like it should be at the end of the year, not like the PGA Tour does today. Okay, anyway, we go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf, and this week we're going to have for you who are the players of the year and the top stories of the year. This is the show you've been waiting for. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alzader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Did you say this is the last show of the year?
So soon, man. It was so fast.
Do you mean we're done? I mean, 2017's over? We're actually going to have an off-season? Wow, that's hard. How'd that happen? It went by so fast. Oh, my goodness. Counting down the 10 biggest stories of the year in golf, we have to apologize a little bit. Our good friend Kieran Clark was scheduled to be here tonight. If you saw some of the posts on Facebook and Twitter and things today, we were saying he was going to be here. But Kieran got sick, and evidently they do have disease in Scotland. I don't know. You know, you get colds and you get the flu and all that stuff over there too. And Kieran had to WD. He had to withdraw.
Couldn't and it do was enough. Today. It was today. He had to withdraw.
It was
today.
Just today. Yeah. Yeah. We're sorry. We plan on he planned on being here, but he is ill this evening and cannot join us. We will miss him greatly. We always enjoy having Kieran on the show and his great wisdom and knowledge, and he always brings a bit of humor. That Scottish wit, and so we will miss that tonight. But Carlos, we will just muddle on and try to get through without him. How about that?
We'll try. It's never the same, but we will try, Kieran. We wish you a prompt recovery so that you are going to be with us on the first show of the year, the preview of the year show. But this year, like you said, Fred, is our final show of the year. And we're going to do something that we haven't done before on our ending season-ending shows. We're going to talk about who are the players of the year, female and male player of the year. It might not come as a surprise, but you'll see. We'll mention them anyway and recap what they did. We have the top 10 stories plus a couple more that are worth mentioning. But let's start right away and dwell right into it. I'm going to talk about the female player of the year, and this one was a tough one because you all know who I was favoring all the time since the very beginning. But I'm happy for who it was. I mean, I have no issues with Lexi Thompson selected by us as the female player of the year. She has been widely accepted as the female player of the year, and unfortunately for her, this 2017 LPGA season ended the way that it started for her, with a heartbreak for her. She's the same woman who suffered that four-stroke penalty on a Sunday at the A&A Inspiration. She missed a two-foot par putt that would have given her the chance at a clean sweep at the CME Group Tour Championship, which included it would have included the LPGA Player of the Year honors and the number one ranking in the world. But instead, she walked off that 18th green asking her caddy, and you, this is sticking in my mind. Did that really happen? I mean, nobody could believe it. She said it. I was like, yes, Lexi, it did happen. I mean, it was like, Wow. The season ender was far from a loss, total loss for her. She drove back to her home in Delray Beach, Florida, with a $1 million bonus check for winning the CME Race to the Globe. And she also won a point toward the LPGA Hall of Fame for clinching the Vera Trophy for low scoring average. I mean, in 2016, a year before, last year, the LPGA had a record 5 players finish the season below 70. This season, that number vaulted to 12, more than twice what it was last year. That should show you how big a year in the LPGA it was. And Lexi Thompson placed second 6 times this year and closed the season with a 69.114 average, beating Sungyeom Park by just 0.133. Her rise in her 6th year on tour was largely due, interestingly enough, to an improved putting. Really, she was putting like crazy. But on that final hole at the CME, she beautifully lagged her first putt from 60 feet, and she looked poised to redeem an emotionally trying season. When it was over, she huddled with a couple of dozen family and friends who came out to support her there. But the 22-year-old collected herself before signing autographs on her way to the 18th green ceremony. Fred, that loss at the CME will stick with her for a while, I think with a lot of people. But that gut punch in the desert prepared her for moments like this. And I see her next year becoming a dominant force. I mean, I see her reaching number one and possibly sweeping the honors that eluded her this year. 2018, Fred, will be next year.
Yeah, Carlos, there's two ways you can go on this deal when something like that happens. You can just say, oh, well, that's going to happen to me. I'm going to, you know, no sense even trying hard the next time because it's just going to happen again. Or you can use that for motivation, work a little bit harder, and then come back out and ready to go. And I really think that's what Lexi's going to do. You know, if you notice, she played this week in the Shark Shootout thing. She played very well. She and Tony Finau had a pretty good week there. They finished. They didn't win, but they were pretty high up in the field, so they did pretty well. But I really think Lexi is on the verge. You know, you know you're pretty good, Carlos, when you win almost $2 million in the year, okay? You lead the tour in greens and regulation with 77.7%. That's unbelievable. Almost 78% greens and regulation. That is really high. You lead the tour in sand saves. You lead the tour in scoring average and rounds under par. You win the $1 million CME race, the CME Globe, and we're saying you had a bad year. You know, what kind of expectations, you know, and she's disappointed, you know, and wondering only what could have been if not for a 4-stroke penalty and a missed 18-inch putt. So, you know, I'm really not too sorry for Lexi. She had a wonderful year, and hopefully she will take this confidence into 2018 and become the dominant player we have been waiting to see. I see her winning 4 or 5 tournaments next year and taking home all the prizes, Carlos.
I totally agree. So now, who is the male player of the year? Was it something close here that we had? Was it a runaway? Who was it and how was it?
The male player of the year was nothing like the female player of the year. Because you mentioned, you know, Sungyeom Park. There could have been So-Young Ru. Shenshen Fang made a big run at the end of the year. I mean, there was a lot of women that had a pretty good year. We chose Lexi. But on the male side, it wasn't close. You know, from the time the FedEx Cup rolled around, Justin Thomas pretty much had it rolled up. And then he sealed the deal by winning the FedEx Cup at the end of the year. So, he has been on the verge of becoming a standout player. You know, he has the length and aggressiveness to take on pretty much any golf course that he steps onto. But no one saw the kind of year he put together in 2017. He started off fast by defending his title at the CMIB Classic in Malaysia, posted 3 top 10 finishes in his first 4 starts in the wraparound schedule in the fall of 2016. Then he really started playing well. He caught lightning in a bottle in Hawaii. He won the SBS Tournament Champions by 3 strokes over Hideki. And the next week, he opened with a 59 on Thursday at Waialae in the Sony Open, posted an aggregate score of 27 under par for 4 rounds. and bested runner-up Justin Rose by 7 shots. They could have called it after Thursday's first round. It was over. It was done. Perhaps like your uncle, after a huge Thanksgiving dinner and a bit too much libation, he took a little nap for a couple months there. He missed 6 cuts in his next 14 starts, including sitting out the weekend at the Open Championship. He did, however, sprinkle in a few top 10s from February to August. There were top 5s at the WGC Mexico and Missouri Classic, a T4 at the Memorial, and a T9 at the U.S. Open at Erin Hills. It appears that, unlike his good buddy Jordan Spieth, Justin may not be the most consistent player on the PGA Tour, but when he's good, he's very, very good. He got back in the groove just at the right time of the year in August. A win at the PGA Championship, as well as the Dell Technology to go with a T6 at the Northern Trust and runner-up at the Tour Championship, left him with 2 wins and 2 top 10s in his last 5 events. For the year, 5 wins, including a major. $10 million FedEx Cup, Player of the Year, gave Thomas just short of $20 million in prize money for the year. That should keep him in golf balls for a while. Justin Thomas, Carlos, is one of the brightest stars on the PGA Tour. At the age of 24, he should be around for a long time, and we get to enjoy more great images of him hoisting trophies. You can count on it.
And to think that a year ago, he was just a one-time winner on the PGA Tour, ranked 34th in the world, and about to be passed over for a Ryder Cup spot. I mean, Jordan Spieth still leads the way for the next generation, but hey, Thomas isn't far behind. When he's on, he's scary good. He fears no one. He fears nothing. He's a really good player. I mean, I think the future of American golf, lead by Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, and also Brooks Koepka, not too far behind. I mean, I think we're in a good situation there. But with that,
you know, and you've got it all right there, Carlos. Too, you've got the consistency of Spieth, you've got the flair of Justin Thomas, you know, and then you've got the brute strength of Brooks Koepka. That's a lot to watch right there. That should be really fun.
And Well, I won't give it away. We'll talk a little bit about those three a little later. Anyway, I almost gave it away there, but no, it's okay. Let's move on.
Don't
to honorable mentions. No. Honorable mention stories. We have a top 10 to go, but before that, we had so many great stories that it was difficult to make a top 10, so we said, hey, let's put them 2 more that were worthy of mention. So those are our honorable mention stories. And the first one is that on Monday, October 16th of this year, Fred Ridley became the 7th chairman in Augusta National Golf Club and Masters history. Ridley took the reins from previous chairman Billy Payne, and he released a statement about what he's looking forward to as the head of the Augusta National Golf Club. He had a stellar amateur career at Florida and even played in 3 Masters as an amateur. And he has the distinctive, I would say he might be the last ever. He's the last right now, and he will be the last ever U.S. amateur champion to never turn professional. That just doesn't happen anymore. That should tell you something about him, and also about amateurs becoming professionals. He's taking over the club in the tournament after 12 years of service from Payne. His tenure, Billy Payne's, is tied for the 2nd longest tenure in club history after Clifford Roberts served for 46 years, and he was also one of the founders. But Ridley will have the heavy burden of not only substituting those two, Clifford Roberts and Billy Payne, but of pushing the Masters into the future as the most revered of all the major championships. He has a big shoes to fill. It has not always been that way and might not always remain like this, but for now he's inheriting the crown jewel of the golf world. Billy Payne, he really nurtured both the tournament and the club into the 2010s and to technology, into innovation. And let me tell you, he did a great job of both. Fred, there will be new challenges for Ridley as he starts this job. I am really excited to see what unfolds. I think he's going to do a great job, and I can't wait for the Masters not to only see it, but to see what Fred Ridley is going to be doing on it.
Yeah, I think he's a little bit different than Billy Payne, but they've worked together for so long, I don't see him being too much different, at least in the short term. Maybe over time we'll see some difference, but you know, Ridley's a very successful attorney, a former U.S. Amateur champion, as you mentioned, and the only chairman I've ever played in the Masters. He has a deep appreciation for all things Bobby Jones and Alistair McKenzie. Even though Fazio and others have taken liberty with the original McKenzie design over the years, I just don't see Ridley approving anything that would diminish or move away from the Jones and McKenzie's original concepts for the course. Will he continue to bring the Masters and Augusta National into the 21st century? Yes. Will he do so with a reserved Southern gentility and respect for the tradition? Yes. Will the Masters change as we know it? No. It's mostly one of the most sacred traditions in sport, and the membership and Mr. Ridley will protect it at all costs. So, Carlos, I think Fred Ridley is the right guy for the job. He's been groomed for this for about 5 years. You know, he knows everything. He's been involved in all the decisions that Billy Payne's been making over the last several years. So I don't think we'll see much change, and I think he's a really good choice for this job.
So who, which is the other story that we have at the honorable mention?
Yeah, our other honorable mention story is one that kind of gets my blood boiling a little bit. And we talked about this in length when it happened. But the Charles Schwab Cup in 2017 just made a complete mockery of the season-long concept to recognize the best player of the year. That's what their website says that the Charles Schwab Cup is supposed to do, recognize the best player of the year in the season-long competition. That is a bunch of BS. Because if that were the case, Bernhard Langer would have had it locked up in August, okay, instead of being screwed out of it at the end. So Langer scripted one of the greatest seasons on any tour in the history of golf and didn't win the ultimate prize, the Charles Schwab Cup, even though he logged 7 victories, including 3 of the 5 major championships. He had wins in the first 2 of the 3 playoff events. He won 2 of the 3 and didn't win the stupid thing. It was a mockery. It was a sham. You know, it's just terrible. Langer was nearly unbeatable this year. In addition to the 7 victories, he had 3 top 10 finishes in 12 of his 21 starts. He never came close to missing a cut with 16 top 10 finishes in 22, plus 3 of his 7 wins. Again, were majors. Kevin Sutherland ended up winning the Charles Schwab Cup. He didn't win a tournament all year. He wasn't close to being the top player on the Champions Tour, but he won the $1 million Charles Schwab Cup, which goes to the top player of the year. So I'm never getting involved. These whole season-long points race things, Kieran has the right idea. They're just a bunch of hokey. So Langer earned over $3.6 million, broke the single-season money record that he set last year. True, Carlos, this is the Champions Tour and not the regular tour, but Bernhard Langer has dominated it like no one else in professional golf, not even Tiger. The man is 60 years old, for goodness sakes. Most guys his age dream of retirement, drinking a cold beer or a fruity drink with an umbrella in it, while ogling bikini-clad young women on a beach somewhere. No, not our Bernhard. He seems to enjoy working out and being in great shape and watching what he eats and beating the hell out of all the other senior golfers on the Champions Tour, and doesn't look like he's going to stop doing it anytime soon. He didn't win his 5th Charles Schwab Cup this year, but everyone knows he is the man to beat. Every week on the Champions Tour, he will probably use this slight next year to be motivated to win it back in 2018, Carlos. That's all I've got to say about that. It still makes me mad.
That doesn't spell good for anybody in the Champions Tour if he's going to come back with a vengeance in there. But definitely that was one of the mockeries of the year, and one that needed to be one of our top stories of the year. But you can imagine if that one didn't make it, which ones are going to be the top 10? Well, we're going to get right into it. And number 10, I have it for you. And that is the European Tour resurgence with the Rolex series and some of Keith Pelley's experiments. You know, since Keith Pelley took over as chief executive officer there with the European Tour in August in 2015, he has earned a reputation as an agent of change. He was even asked of that, and he said, so they say, I'm not sure. Yeah, right. This year, Pelley unveiled one of the most important initiatives in the tour's history, which is the Rolex series that elevates 8 world-class golf tournaments into unmissable sporting occasions. I mean, from the elegant environs of Wentworth to the burgeoning metropolis of Dubai, via the plains of South Africa and the rock links of Kieran's homeland in Scotland, the Rolex series has created an unprecedented calendar of global golfing showpieces. Many of the biggest names in golf descended on some of the world's most iconic destinations to do battle for the enhanced prize of at least $7 million and race to Dubai points that a Rolex series tournament victory brings. The tour also started what it's called the Access List, which will be a separate money list that will not include earnings from the Rolex series, the Masters, the PGA Championship, and the 4 WGCs. The top 3 players on that list will be invited to play in the Rolex series events and the top 10 finishers. He also introduced something really interesting, which is called the Golf Sixes, in 2 different formats. One, and this is an experiment, let me say that, which is 54 holes of traditional stroke play, followed by a new match play finale on Sunday to determine the winner. That was played at the event that was in Lake Cairn up in Perth, and they follow up with the other variation, which was a 16 two-man teams, and that was at the Hertfordshire Club Centurion 3 months later. This time, there was no stroke play involved, just some greensomes match play that was contested over 6 holes. Both were experiments, but got raving reviews from players and fans alike. Also, he introduced what is called the Hero Challenge. And not the Hero World Challenge, the Hero Challenge, which is a unique, fast-paced event under the floodlights 2 days before the British Masters. It consists of a 1-hole knockout match play over a specially constructed par 3 on the Grove's 18-hole. 8 players with 7 head-to-head matches and 1 winner. The winner from the 4 opening round matches progressed through the 2 semifinals, with the subsequent 2 winners contesting a final head-to-head match to decide the Hero Challenge champion. Then, if the 2 opponents have the hole, the outcome of that contest will be decided by a sudden death that is a tee shot, which was the nearest to the pin. Lee Westwood won that one, and let me tell you, it brought the house down. It was filled, packed up. The players loved it. The fans loved it. Fred, with a clear focus on innovation, the Rolex series, the Golf Sixes, and the Hero Challenge certainly entertained the golf fans like never before there in the European Tour, on TV, online, and on the course. And Keith Pelley, definitely, this is not going to happen overnight. He needs to make the European Tour relevant, and that's his goal, to keep bringing back a lot of the top marquee players. But this was a heck of a great start this year, Fred.
Yeah, you know, it did stimulate a lot of interest, and Pelley is doing a great job of getting headlines and keeping the media talking about the European Tour. We follow it. We're interested. We want to know who's doing well over there, because those are the guys that are coming to the PGA Tour down the road, but also for the Ryder Cup every 2 years. We want to see who's playing well and who's doing well going to make the team, the European team. So, but this Rolex series in particular, I'm quite interested in. You know, you had the BMW PGA at Wentworth. You had the Open de France. You have the Irish Open, the Scottish Open, the Italian, Turkish Airlines, the Ned Bank down South Africa, and then you wrapped it up with the DP World Tour Championship. All of them had at least a $7 million purse. So, I mean, that's in line with what a PGA Tour event is here in America. The minimum now is around $6 million. There's a couple smaller opposite field events, but most of the average run-of-the-mill PGA tournaments are at least $6 million. And the DP World Championship paid $8 million total purse. So he's interjected some real money into the tour and getting the top names to come. So you got John Rahm won two times in this Rolex Series. You got Justin Rose, one of them. You got Brandon Grace, one down in South Africa. And Tommy Fleetwood was still able to he won one. He won at the Open de France, and he won the overall race to Dubai. So it's interjected a lot of interest, a lot of excitement into the European Tour. I know, like you say, it does kind of create a separate tour over there. You've got the one for the haves and one kind of for the have-nots. But you know what? That's what he's got to do right now to generate interest and get sponsors to come. So, Carlos, number nine on our list of the biggest stories for 2017 in the golf world, declining TV ratings for golf. You know, that's a story that we have followed all year long and will certainly continue to report on it in the coming year. Golf ratings in general are going down, but the live streaming numbers are increasing almost every week. With the major network contracts up for renewal with NBC, Golf Channel, and CBS in the next couple of years, it adds even more spice to the mix. Tim Fincham had the luck of having a young Tiger Woods at the PGA Tour right when he negotiated huge TV deals that set the tour as one of the most lucrative sports leagues. However, declining ratings plus an aging and oft-injured Tiger Woods has not boded well for the tour of late. A recent list of the most attractive sports sponsorship opportunities for large corporations listed golf dead last. I think even televised tiddlywinks outdid golf. You know, we've always talked about golf having a very high income, high average income market. It reaches into the households with more disposable income. So that's why the Rolexes and the Cadillacs of the world want to advertise and sponsor golf events. But it's just not getting it done lately. We will talk more about Tiger Woods' return at the Hero World Challenge more a little later in the show, but his strong performance in the Bahamas 2 weeks ago breathed a sigh of relief among PGA Tour executives and gives a glimmer of hope that a TV deal can be struck that will not be maybe too much of a decrease from the giant revenues the tour has been realizing during the Tiger Woods era. Another issue is what to do about the internet and live streaming. Should the tour develop its own content? Do they really need the networks? Can they produce the live feeds themselves and just sell it to the network plus live stream it on the internet? Will Fortune 500 companies shell out the kind of permitted ad cost it takes to produce a golf tournament for a TV and internet audience? You know, the tour has to be looking at the success of Golf Channel and the Big Ten Network and a few other cable network channels that have resulted in huge rewards for their creators. Will we see a PGA Tour channel coming soon? This, to me, is one of the most interesting stories in golf today. Stay tuned, kiddies. We will have more on this subject in 2018, Carlos.
I think, and I'm going to tell you this, and mark my words, the term open access will be the future of what I think the PGA Tour has to adopt, and many of these big sports leagues are going to be doing. And by open access, I mean this. I think you mentioned it in a little bit about providing their own content, but let's put it this way. I am the one that produces the content, but I license it. If you want to broadcast it, you're going to broadcast what I am preparing. It's not going to be me or my channel. It's going to be me producing the content, but you are going to be broadcasting it. So you connect to me, and you broadcast it wherever you want. That is the model that I think is going to be done, and it's going to take a little while, but I think you'll see it. You'll see it. Mark it. I said it today, December 12, 2017, the open access where the networks, not the networks, let's say the PGA Tour has their own broadcasting company there, but they, you want a NBC to connect to you, they can do it, and they can then promote it wherever they want, through TV, through the internet, however they want. It's going to be protected that way, because that is the only way they can ensure they're going to be getting and receiving some of that income that right now is just going down the drain through the online broadcasts. But like you said, we're going to be continuing this story, and we have followed it up ever since we've been here, and we'll continue to do so. But remember that I'm telling you, that is going to be the future of how things are going to be broadcast. And I gave a little bit away there of knowledge from technology, but you'll see. Hey, top story number 8. Rory McIlroy had a down year. Yes, Rory McIlroy had a down year. I mean, it's like the Pope missed a couple of sessions there at the Flat Square there in Rome. I mean, Rory McIlroy. Yeah. Rory McIlroy, he started the 2017 year as the second-ranked player in the world and was the favorite to complete his career Grand Slam at the Masters. He finished it ranked number 10 with no wins. So it comes as no surprise that Rory pinned the blame for what you can call it an indifferent PGA Tour year squarely on a frustrating injury-plagued stateside season. Rory's PGA Tour year ended unceremoniously in Chicago with the poorest FedEx Cup standing since joining the Tour full-time in 2011. And in the process of finishing well down the board at Conway Farms, Rory also failed to qualify for the Tour Championship in Atlanta. However, it didn't help McIlroy's year that he sat out nearly 6 weeks early in 2017 after a ripped tear, and then only to do further damage returning in May. The worst thing, I don't know how to explain this one, but I'm going to try, and I'm sorry, I'm going to say it. The worst thing was that he got married, and going in on his honeymoon, he got back into practice, and instead of gradually increasing the practice each day, the first day he got back, he was out there for 5 to 6 hours hitting balls and playing and practicing. How can a man actually be able to do that in his honeymoon? It's something that defies the laws and rules of nature of a newlywed man. That cannot be done. I mean, Rory, you should have known better. His back felt a little tight after the day after. Oh, my back is feeling a little tight. Rory, I give thanks to God that was the only thing that was tight after that. And said that he played 4 months and he could not hit a shot left or right. You can't do that and expect to win. It's the reason why Rory McIlroy shut down his season after contesting the Alfred Dunhill Links title, and he forgo then the European Tour Final Series, so that he's fully healed for the start of the 2018 season. Fred, and his new year is likely, and for the first time in his career, to commence on the Californian coast, that he's trying to get primed to finally try and compete and complete the career Grand Slam at the Masters, which is shaping out to be quite a story when you come and think about that Tiger Woods might be also on his way to try to see if he can win major number 15.
Throw in Justin Thomas, throw in Jordan Spieth, throw in Ricky Fowler, throw in about 8 or 10 other guys. The Masters, we're already talking about it. It's over 4 months away. Oh, my goodness. You know, Rory didn't win anywhere in 2013. You know, 2012, remember, he had the big, I guess it was early 2013 when he had the big switch to Nike, and they had the big show with the fireworks and the smoke and all that stuff in Dubai. Remember, and then he didn't win all year, and everybody was blaming the equipment. And then he comes out in 2014, has a monster year. look out for Rory in 2014, Carlos. These injuries, he's taking some time off. He'll get healed up. He'll listen to his doctors. He'll listen to his therapist. He'll get it right this time. You know, he'll come back. You know, he'll be a little rusty probably at the beginning of the year, but look for him to start winning early and often next year. So that brings us down to number seven on our list of the biggest golf stories for 2017. And this one put a real damper on somebody's season. Dustin Johnson had it going on. He was on top of the world heading into the Masters. He was having a magical season. You know, he was set. We're talking about monster season. He was set to have one. He seemed to have all the stars aligned in his favor. But alas, a slippery staircase did him in. In fact, he injured his back and was unable to hit the first tee shot at Augusta and was forced to take several weeks away from golf altogether. Beginning with a T6 at the SBS Tournament of Champions in January, Dustin Johnson missed the cut at Torrey Pines but was third at Pebble Beach, then ran off three straight wins at Riviera, World Golf Championship in Mexico, and the World Golf Championship match play. He was ready to accept a green jacket. But that nasty slip and slide down the staircase in his rental home in Augusta, forget it. What a shame. He was at the absolute pinnacle of his game and was the odds-on favorite to win the Masters. Returning in May, he posted a runner-up finish at the Wells Fargo. He finished the year as world number one, won the Northern Trust, the first stop on the FedEx Cup playoffs, and ultimately finished fourth in the FedEx Cup standings, winning just under $8 million for the year. As good as his year was, we simply are left to wonder what could have been if he wouldn't have taken that slip, Carlos.
I would have. He was poised. I remember this. We were talking, hey, this DJ and the rest of him. his tournament to lose. And when we heard that, I mean, it was like mind-blowing. It was like it took the air out of the Masters at that point because everybody was expecting him to at least contend for the win, be there on Sunday at the last group. But, hey, he's recovering, and this is another player that is also reaching its peak. Once he returned, he was a little rusty, and, of course, he was welcoming another kid, and he's back now. I think 2018 is going to be another year where he's going to start playing great again, and I can't wait. I mean, Tiger, Rory, Justin, Jason Day is also coming back and getting into shape. Jordan Spieth, oh my goodness. I mean, it's going to be an incredible season on the PGA Tour. And one that you said that the ratings are declining, and I think they are salivating about the possibility of selling all these superstars fighting each other. If they can have a monster season among them, hey, the sky's the limit for those contracts. Let's move to number six. We're going to talk about the American dominance in team events. They dominated the President's Cup. They dominated the Solheim Cup and the Walker Cup. The Americans ruled the team events this year. I remember before the President's Cup, when we were reporting, making the preview, I remember saying, Hideki Matsuyama can't play every match. Take away him, and who exactly was in top form right then? Louis? Johnny Vegas? This could be ugly. And it was. The record-winning margin is 11.5 points by the Americans in 2000, and it was in danger starting Sunday. The U.S. won their seventh consecutive President's Cup over the international team, even as the final margin of 8 points disguised the one-sided event nature of the event. A Sunday rally by the beleaguered internationals, who won 6 of the 12 singles matches and have 3 others, allowed the visitors to avoid a record defeat and escape Liberty National with a little pride. The U.S. was led by unbeaten Dustin Johnson and Phil Mickelson, and they prevailed 19-11. to claim the cup for the 10th time in 12 stagings of the biennial event. The result left the international team really searching for ways to make the event more competitive heading to the 2019 installment at Royal Melbourne in Australia, and really everybody trying to see how can make this a relevant international team event. On the ladies' side, it was a red, white, and blue day in West Des Moines, Iowa, in what was closing Sunday. In a single session that featured tight battles across the scoreboard, Team USA won 5 matches and kept the Solheim Cup on the U.S. soil with a 16.5 to 11.5 victory over Team Europe. That 5-point margin is the USA's largest win since 1996, and it was also forever linked the USA captain Julie Inkster's name with the great Judy ranking as the only two women for either side to lead two victorious Solheim Cup teams. Even Team Europe's captain Annika Sørenstam admitted they were outplayed. There was no doubt about that. At least there was one match for the ages. That was one that I will never forget. Or at least soon or long term, I won't forget it. And that was the opening bout between Lexi Thompson and Anna Nordqvist, which while Nordqvist was up 4 after 4 holes, and the Europeans were looking ready to make that historic comeback. They were fighting. It was tight. Everybody was tight looking at that because their captain was up front. But after a pep talk from Captain Julie Inkster at the turn, Lexi made a remarkable comeback in a match that you can say it defined sportsmanship and a never-give-up attitude and ended all square, fittingly for such a hard-fought match. But that was it for the Europeans. They couldn't do anything else. But it was a great performance by the Americans. And for the Walker Cup, the U.S. win at the 2017 Walker Cup at the Los Angeles Country Club made that infamous 2006 Ryder Cup thrashing look mild by comparison. The U.S. took down Great Britain and Ireland 19-7 in the biennial matches and then piled on late for good measure. The U.S. team was captained by Spider Miller in his second and last run at the helm. It had three players, Maverick McNealy, Doug Gim, and Colin Morikawa, who went 4-0 this year, which has never been accomplished in a Walker Cup or a Ryder Cup before. Fred, the U.S. lost the matches in 2015 at the Royal Lytham and St. Anne's 16.5 to 9.5, but leads over the overall series, which dated back to 1922 by a count of 36-9. And that 19 points ties the record for the most that have ever been scored by a single team in Walker Cup history, and is the most the U.S. has put up since 1993. Talk about a revenge beatdown this year. That was a show of force of American golf on all three team events.
Yeah, you know, what can you say? The President's Cup was a laugher. The Internationals just never had a chance. And even Adam Scott, Jason Day, Mark Leishman, you know, they just could not carry a very weak team that really, you know, like you mentioned, Hideki, they couldn't do it by themselves. Does the President Cup need adjustment? Is it too difficult for the Internationals to play as a team? I don't think so. They'll get it figured out. They're just on a down cycle. I really think what we're really seeing right now is the energizing of the American team with some great young talent. And we should see that carry forward into the future events. The Walker Cup, same story. Even though most of the European team members compete in American colleges, Team USA was just too strong. The Walker Cup does and always will exemplify the best in tradition of sportsmanship and competition, however. If you were watching the young men you saw on the Walker Cup team, you're soon going to be seeing them on the PGA and European tours. So it's always fun to watch those guys. They compete hard. They play hard. It means something to them. It's really good stuff. The Solheim Cup. You mentioned it really. The highlight was the Lexi Thompson and Anna Nordqvist match. The Europeans tried to make something happen on Sunday, but it was pretty much all over but the shouting before it got to there. Angel Yin was a little bit of the story of the week. She put on a power display, hitting the ball out there a million yards. So Solheim Cup's always good stuff, and I can't wait till it gets here to Toledo in 2021. But, Carlos, it was a pretty good year for American team events, but I'm already looking forward to the big one next year in France. I anticipate a bunch of new young guys, especially on the European team. It should be very exciting indeed. And that brings us up to, drumroll, number five in our list of 2017 biggest golf stories. And that was the ever-changing who's number one at the top of the Rolex rankings on the LPGA. You know, we had become rather spoiled and expected to see Lydia Ko remain atop the Rolex rankings for like many years to come. After all, she debuted at number four in the world rankings when she turned professional at the age of 17 and had already won professional events before turning pro herself. The ride continued as she racked up 12 wins in her first three seasons on tour, including two majors, and quickly became the number one ranked player in the world. Well, the wear and tear of constant travel, pressure of being number one, and changes to her coaching staff and swing made her less consistent, and 2017 was not her best year. Her last win came at the 2016 Marathon Classic, where Carlos, right here in Toledo, Ohio, winning in a playoff over Arija Chetanikarn and Miriam Lee. I was right there in the heat, sweating my you-know-what off, taking pictures and watching that. That may be the last time that Arija trailed Lydia, though. Arija surpassed Lydia in June of 2017 after Ko had held the number one ranking for 85 weeks, beginning in late October 2015. Chetanikarn would only be number one for 2 weeks, however. She struggled with her driver and the pressure of being number one. After a win at the Manulife Classic, she finished T22 at the KPMG Women's PGA, then missed cuts. She withdrew, and another missed cut. Those were her next three starts. A T44 at the Women's Scottish kept her around for the weekend, but three more missed cuts at the Women's British, the Canadian, and the Evian had her spiraling out of control. Arija did rebound at the end, winning the CME Globe Championship when Lexi missed that little putt, and finished the year on a positive note. So-Young Ryu was a beneficiary of Lexi Thompson's unfortunate four-stroke penalty at the ANA Championship at the beginning of the year, but as one of the most consistent players on the LPGA Tour, she followed that up with a three top 10 finishes and a second win in Arkansas. She tied for third at the U.S. Women's Open, added more good finishes at the KEB Hanabank, and the swinging sturts on the Asian swing. But the rookie Sung-Young Park overtook her as world number one in November. Park would only hold the top spot for 1 week, however, when Shan Shan Fang went on a winning streak in Asia and knocked Park down to number two. From the Women's British Open at the beginning of August, Fang finished top 10 in seven of her final nine events of the year. Plus, two of those were wins, one in Japan and then one on her home soil at the Blue Bay in China. Fang finished the year as number one and is assured to be there for at least a few more weeks until the tour gets started again after the first year. With Lydia Ko losing her edge as the most dominant female golfer, there's a host of young, talented women just waiting to move up the Rolex rankings. The name that Carlos likes and watches closely, Sung-Young Park. She was there for a week. Will she get back? Or will Lexi Thompson build on her strong 2017 and become a dominant force in women's golf? Stay tuned in 2018. Backline Report is going to have it all for you, Carlos.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for that. It's going to be a great year of golf overall, and we'll have that preview next year at our first show of the year, 2018. But now it's all down to number four. We're in the final four right now. The top story, number four, is rules changes unveiled by the RNA and
rules?
The USGA.
Rules?
Yes.
We don't need no stinking rules.
rules, hey, it's back. It's going to be, well, you'll see. Back in March, it was announced that the rules of golf will undergo massive changes in 2019. At that time, I said, why not now? But anyway, the next time the rules of golf are jointly published by the USGA and the IRNA, all told, 30 proposed changes to the rules of golf will reduce the number of rules in the rule book from 34 to 24. That is like four too many. And the rules of golf changes will eliminate a number of issues that are annoying to amateurs and recreational players while also creating some headaches for pros. The changes span a wide range of issues, from grounding the club in the penalty area to determining if a ball moved, to repairing damage on greens, to relaxing drop-in procedures. It's the culmination of a five-year process. Well before the high-profile major drama last June, that should reduce the prevalence of penalty traps, armchair rules officials, and slow-motion high-definition examinations. The governing bodies usually revise the rules every 4 years, but this new edition will be implemented a year earlier, on January 1st, 2019. They alerted the major pro tours about the proposed changes at the beginning of this year. There were many, but I will stick to two that pop out of my mind from the ones back in March. One of the most radical proposals is that a player will be allowed to ground his club everywhere except the bunker. By allowing a player to touch the ground with his club and move loose impediments in the penalty area. Remember Carl Peterson at the 2012 PGA Championship, anyone? That's it. The rule change that could most significantly affect week-to-week competition is that players now will be allowed to repair any damage on the greens, including spike marks. Previously, players were allowed to fix only ball marks in their lines. This reminds me of Simon Dyson 2013 when he was embroiled in a cheating scandal. So call it the Simon Dyson rule. From the previous one is the Carl Peterson rule. But the one I love the most, I love this one so much. It was announced in March. It was announced yesterday. Yesterday. Just 24 hours ago. On December 11th, the USGA, IRNA, the PGA of America, and golf's major professional tours jointly announced a new local rule which will end the era of golf fans and watchers calling in rules violations not spotted by golfers in the middle of competition. Specifically, the USGA and the IRNA announced this local rule will no longer allow officials to consider rules violations raised by spectators using video evidence from a television broadcast or captured on the side by a mobile phone or other capture device. In addition, the major tours have agreed to place an official with the television production crew for each tournament so that they can watch the coverage and related footage in real time and assess potential rules violations without the interjection of fans. These officials could still assess penalties for violation of the spot-on coverage if they deemed the player had knowledge of the rule they were violating and committed the violation on purpose, disregarding the rules. That's a little bit out to interpretation, but hey, further, the local rule, which becomes available from January 1st next year, eliminates the additional two-stroke penalty applied to players for failing to include a penalty on the scorecard when the player was unaware of the penalty. Fred, this I will call it the Lexi Thompson rule. Thank you. Thank you, PGA Tour, European Tour, LPGA, Ladies European Tour, and PGA of America for studying this issue since April and coming up with this. Anyone listening out there, you can stop looking for the phone number to report rules violations you spot while watching pro golf on TV. Go get some popcorn, some soda. This was not and is never your place to begin with.
Thank God. Thank God it was time. We have talked about this. It was just ridiculous, the stuff that they were doing. You know, it's just unbelievable they even did it in the first place. But Carlos, I'm glad evidently somebody at the USGA, somebody at the RNA, they must be listening to us, because we've been telling them for years how stupid they are. They finally, who says the USGA doesn't, you know, they don't pay attention and aren't quick to learn? Well, it took them like 15 years or something. You know, this thing goes back. You know, they showed a clip of this. I was talking to somebody on the phone the other day, and I said, you know, this whole call-in thing goes clear back to Craig Stadler, and I think it was 1986 or 7 or something like that, when he put the towel down so he wouldn't get his knees dirty on his pants to hit that shot from under the tree. And somebody called in and said, oh, he's building a stance. That's an illegal shot. And this thing has just been, especially the last couple of years, just been snowballing out of control. Yeah, as you mentioned, this new thing they're going to do with the no call-ins, they're going to assign one or more officials to monitor the video broadcast of a competition to help identify and resolve rules issues as they arise. None of this stuff waiting overnight and then docking them two more shots for signing an incorrect scorecard. They're going to discontinue any steps to facilitate or consider viewer call-ins as part of the rules decision process. I applaud them. I applaud them greatly. I'm glad they finally did this. They just did it about 5 or 6 years too late. Number three on our 2017 biggest golf stories of the year. We're talking about changing the schedule a little bit. We've been talking about that off and on all year. The Olympics last year forced the PGA Tour to condense the season and relook at how the year is configured. The PGA Championship is tired of being the last major of the year and lobbied to move to May beginning in 2019. The problem with that was that there's already a big event in May, the Players' Championship, so it had to be moved back to its original spot in March, which, with the Honda Classic and the Valspar still in Florida, gives some semblance of a Florida swing once again. Another, the only problem with that is, you know, it's cold and wet and rainy in Florida in March. I don't know if you remember when they used to have the Players in March. There was some years when it was downright crappy weather. Another issue for the tour is wanting to end its season before football season really gets into high gear in the United States. The FedEx Cup playoffs need to be over before September 1 rolls around. Because of all this changing, some events were going to need to be eliminated completely. Is the WGC Bridgestone one of those? Probably not, but it may be moved to Japan, the home of the Bridgestone Company. This may mean, however, that Firestone Country Club, that's held a PGA Tour event since 1954, may be dropped from the schedule. What will happen in 2019, however, is a crapshoot right now. It's hard to imagine a PGA Tour season without a large PGA Tour event at the iconic venue. Bridgestone, of course, is owned by a Japanese firm. It has multinational presence and may want to bring a PGA Tour event to Japan, which aligns nicely with the tour's expansion plans to Asia. It already has an event on the Japan, Bridgestone has an event on the Japan Professional Golf Tour, but may want to stress the importance of the international play. After all, China has a PGA Tour sanctioned event, the WGC HSBC, in October every year, so why not Japan? With the big movement of big events on the PGA Tour to earlier dates, the PGA Championship to May and the Players to March, other changes are going to be forced to be made. Normally, extensions are announced of the tournaments when contracts reach their final year. 2018 is the final year for the Bridgestone sponsorship, and no extension agreement has been announced. The Tour and Bridgestone are currently in negotiation for 2019 and beyond. Bridgestone is going to sponsor a PGA Tour event, but nobody knows quite sure where it's going to be yet. Another plot twist involves Dan Gilbert, CEO of Quicken Loans, who pulled the sponsorship from Tiger's event in July. Gilbert was rumored to be trying to bring an event to Detroit, but he also owns the Cavs. Could a LeBron James Dan Gilbert partnership be made to keep the PGA Tour in Akron? I don't know. They're working on it. The last chapter of the story is not yet written, but there's a lot of unknowns and plot twists that we will follow as the story unfolds next year. Carlos, it's hard to imagine not going to a PGA Tour event at Firestone, man. It's a wonderful place.
Oh, no, I still can't believe it. We reported on that not long ago. It was it's incredible, really. I can't imagine not seeing it there after such a long time. It's like a fixture on the PGA Tour. But, you know, the Olympics are coming, and we know it has to be changed. There has to be a change, and I think it's going to work out for the best. Okay, we're down to two. Just two more to go before we wrap up our top stories of the year. Number two is just a recap, a quick recap of what happened on the PGA Tour Major Championships. We talked, and this is what I wanted to say. Those three Americans that we talked about, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, and Brooks Koepka, they won three of the four majors this year. And each one of them, I think, applied to their style. You were talking about the overpowering style of Brooks Koepka. He definitely overpowered on the U.S. Open there at Erin Hills in Wisconsin. Jordan Spieth had to resource to every single trick he has under his sleeve to win there, his 11th career victory and his third major championship by winning the Open. And Justin Thomas, he capped an incredible season there by winning the 99th PGA Championship for his first major title. But it was a veteran, unlikely winner on his first major, Sergio Garcia, who won the Masters. I mean, of all four, the biggest rating was that one. Why? It was his first one. He beat Justin Rose in a playoff. I mean, Koepka, he won on a roll. He was really never threatening as he had his 72-hole total of 16-under, which tied the tournament record for the lowest total under par set by McIlroy at Congressional in 2011. So he definitely had that one going all the way. He became the seventh consecutive first-time winner in the men's major, and he was the youngest of the seven by a few months. Now, the and Jordan, he won it by three over Matt Kuchar, but he emerged from the practice area on the equipment trailers to claim the Claret Jug on Sunday there at Royal Birkdale at what was maybe the shot of the year. Nobody would have expected the way that he played that and played so good. After that, he certainly secured. And I know Fred and I disagree on this. To me, it was the most boring of the four, even though to him it was an incredible way to see that. But I say that he was just playing against himself. He wasn't playing against anybody. He knew Matt Kuchar was not going to be a factor in this one, and he never was. Matt just played to try to keep himself there. It was Jordan really going up and down, and that 12-under, he never was in doubt to me. Justin Thomas really, many times throughout his young career, he has been his own worst enemy. But much like his high-octane swing that makes him pound per pound maybe the longest player in professional golf, I mean, he tips the scales just about 150 pounds. Where does Justin Thomas get that all power? He's the demonstrative player with a big personality who rides the highs and lows with equal intensity, often to his detriment, as he quickly can't shake bad moments. But with each passing tournament, he has tried to tone down himself and make patience the 15th club in his back. You know, there was no bigger test on that front than in Sunday's volatile final round there at the PGA Championship, and he aced it. I mean, he won incredibly there on the playoff, and he broke up from the pack to win his major championship. But to me, definitely winning that first major, no one would have expected him to win his first major at the Masters There was even the crowd behind him chanting, "Sergio, Sergio." Who would have imagined that an American crowd would be chanting, "Sergio, Sergio," as he was celebrating there at the 18th green? It was a long time coming for him. We knew he was playing well. He felt like the calmest. It was like a different Sergio all the way. That win made him the third Spanish golfer to become Master Champion, along with Sergio Ballesteros and Jose Maria Olazabal. Both of them won it too. And to him, it was significant because he said that it was amazing to do that on Sergio's 60th birthday. So, and join him and Olazabal as his two idols in golf his whole life. It was just amazing. And to me, Fred, it was an incredible season of the major championships, but surprisingly, that Sergio victory was not only surprising, but it brought some attention back into golf right away, and it just kept going up after that.
Yeah, who saw Sergio Garcia winning a green jacket at Augusta? With all the abuse that Sergio has caused and taken over the years, it was amazing to me that he received the universal platitudes from just about every corner of the globe, including the media, for that, for his win. As you say, it was a very popular win for Sergio. Since 1996, Sergio has played in 77 major championships as both an amateur and professional. 22 times he has finished inside the top 10. So nearly 30% of the time he has finished in the top 10. He had four runners-up before he won the Masters. So he's been close a lot of times, and he finally got it done. The scars of the past, the what-ifs, they're now erased. Sergio was definitely too good of a player not to have won at least one major. The question to me is, can he win a couple more and join fellow Spaniards Seve and Jose Maria in the Hall of Fame? That's the next thing for Sergio. He's 37 years old. He's got another, you know, good 4 or 5 years to go. He could do it. Koepka simply brutalized Aaron Hills with the bombs he was hitting with the driver. He played brilliantly. We've watched this Florida native progress through the ranks of the European Tour and now reach the pinnacle of the PGA Tour. He's recognized as one of the best golfers in the world. His final world ranking for 2017 is at number 8, and I will not be surprised to see him improve on that next year. Spieth's finish, Carlos, I have to disagree with you, man. Over those final 5 holes at Royal Birkdale were simply unbelievable. Even after seeing it 5 months later, I still can't believe what he did. And I'm sure Matt Kuchar can't either. Jordan Spieth loves the big moment. He embraces it. It seems to make him more focused and determined. The shots he made at 15, 16, 7 to slip by Matt Kuchar at the end of the final round on Sunday at Royal Birkdale were simply brilliant. And we will not soon forget them. We talked about Justin Thomas as Player of the Year earlier in the show. He capped off a wonderful year by winning his first major of the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow. Validating what golf people were saying about him, he joined his buddy Jordan Spieth and gave us more to talk about next year, Carlos. And we should mention also that Siwoo Kim won the Players Championship. He was so consistent that week; nothing seemed to bother him. He just went shot by shot. He was really on. Everything was working well. So we need to give a shout-out to him, too, for an excellent Players' Championship. I know the Players is not an official major. We're talking about majors, but it's a major to me, Carlos. So, anyhow, that brings us down, drum roll, to the number one, the biggest story. Who's always the biggest story in golf? Exactly. Frickin' Woods. You got it. Tiger Woods. We all read about it happening. Tiger sent us videos via social media to let us know he was coming. The media talking heads all predicted, including us to some extent. not to expect too much from Tiger on his latest return to the PGA Tour. All we needed was a theme song from Jaws to go along with those images. Da-da, da-da, da, don't go in the water, he's licking. Tiger Woods' performance at the Hero World Challenge a couple weeks ago was much better than anyone could have imagined. He proved everyone wrong with a how you like me now kind of smirk. Seriously, though, no one seemed to be as happy as Tiger about the way he was able to keep up with the kids all week long. He regained his length. He hit crisp irons. His chipping, although not perfect, was for the most part acceptable and will continue to improve. Most noticeably, however, was the swing. He moved with strength and purpose. He was able to cut loose with long swings with a driver and hacks out of the rough and sand. Last year, we saw the trepidation Woods had on some shots because he was waiting for that flash of pain during and after the swing. There was none of that this year. A bonus to Woods' return was the television ratings. Everyone was watching, not only at home on their big screens, but at work, when they were traveling or lying by the pool. They were watching on their smartphones, on their tablets. They were watching the live streaming. The numbers were astounding. This is what golf has been missing. This is what will draw casual golf fans away from their football telecasts to watch golf. This is what inspires young kids to go out and hit a bucket of balls to be as good as Tiger. Woods has been stuck on 14 major championships since 2008. His four rounds at the Hero World Challenge have given everyone, including Tiger himself, hope that he can once again compete in majors and continue his attempt to catch Jack Nicklaus's record of 18 major championship victories. We are so lucky that we get to watch and talk about this, Carlos. That's what we see the hope for 2018. We just can't wait. Throw in the young guys, throw in a healthy Tiger. Man, 2018 could be pretty exciting. What do you think?
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. I tell you, I think Tiger's going to be in the thick of it after what we saw. It was just a glimpse of what he can become once he comes back into form. I was just reading the other day something interesting. Is the PGA Tour now is going to face back again the new Tiger Mania. Again, now with after all this time, is something they've been wanting to get from the rest of the players, but now that Tiger's back, and we saw what happened there at the Hero World Challenge. I mean, Charlie Hoffman hits a 9-under, and all everybody was talking about was, hey, Tiger, did you see Tiger? He's there, just three shots behind, all this, Tiger that. Hey, Charlie shot 9-under. He's the leader halfway. How about Charlie? And even the first day, Justin Thomas, hey, he had as good a round as Tiger, and nobody was asking him how he did. He was like, how about Tiger? And also on the last day, Ricky Fowler won with a record-setting final round, incredible round. I mean, he played lights out. And he was even the first question that was like, how do you thought Tiger played after all this? Hey, I just won the tournament. Aren't you going to ask me anything about me? I'm the winner.
Yeah, I play pretty good,
too. I know Tiger's here, but, you know, I have a trophy. He gave it to me.
Yeah.
I mean, they obviously didn't react that way.
You know, Carlos, that used to drive Phil absolutely berserk. Because, yeah. You know, Phil would come in, you know, he had 5 years on Tiger, and Phil was, you know, doing pretty well. And all anybody wanted to do was talk about the new Tiger Woods, you know, young Tiger, that new guy, that new kid. Tell us about Tiger Woods. What's it like playing with him? You know, Phil didn't want to talk about Tiger. He wants to talk about Phil. And that used to just drive him berserk.
Yeah, and I mean, all of them were really, really gracious. They took all the questions. They answered them. They answered the few they asked about them. But even the next day, you would see I saw the golfchannel.com, and everywhere you would see like 20 stories, 15 were Tiger stories. And The thing is, these players for a few years now have been able to somehow being away from that shadow, big shadow that Tiger makes whenever he's in a tournament. Even the few times that he was in the tournament, he couldn't finish it. Everyone was questioning about Tiger. So what when he comes back and they start playing and they start again asking Tiger about Tiger about Tiger, will it wear down on them? How would they take that? Because this is not going away. So that's one of the things that I will be looking forward to see how the other players react to the Tiger Mania that is going to be again there. All the crowds, all these big crowds following Tiger hole by hole, and now they're not going to be with them. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be a good thing at the end result for the ratings and for the awareness of golf. And I can imagine, I think Tiger's going to make the Ryder Cup as a player, and that will be an amazing Ryder Cup to watch. Now him and Phil playing. Would you imagine that Phil, and because right now I'm going to, this would be something for the preview show, but I'm going to give you and ask you this one, Fred, since we have a few minutes to go that we can spend here. But how about this possibility? It's, of course, may not happen, but there are plenty of players that can make that team ahead of Phil on points. Plenty that can make them. Phil can, might have to become, again, a captain's pick. I think that if he makes it next year, it will be on a captain's pick. Now, there's a lot of good players as well that could potentially leave him out. Do you think that that could be happening? And maybe Tiger make it on points?
I think Phil was lucky to get in this last time. If I wouldn't have chosen him. I would not have. Stricker, you know, they did. Love did. He brought him on. And he did well. Phil played hard. He did well with all the teammates. He always does. So that was a good thing. But I'm going to give you one name, Lee Westwood. Lee should not have been on the European Ryder Cup team. He embarrassed himself. He hurt the team. There were two or three other guys that should have been on that team that could have really helped the Europeans this last time, and they brought Lee along instead. I don't know. I think Phil's got to be getting close to the end of his string. The only way that he gets a captain's pick if he's just like right there at 11th or 12th, if he's just, you know, just really close, if he's like below 22 in the ranking, I just don't see him bringing him on. But I don't know.
I don't think he'll be that low, but I think he'll be close. But what I see is that there's going to be enough players. I don't think he'll be 12th, number 12 on the ranking. And I'm predicting it right now. I don't think he'll be 12. He might come and do it, but I don't think he'll be 12. And that's what I think is going to make it interesting to see. So do you think he will be around 12, or how do you see it playing out?
Unless he wins a major, because he only plays in the big tournaments. He plays in a couple other ones, but basically the big tournaments. If he won a major, they would bring him on the team for sure, even if he was down around 20. If he's much below 12 or 13 in the ranking, I just don't see him getting on, Carlos. I really don't.
Even if he's on the committee?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I just don't see it. Yeah. You got too many. Too many good young guys, man. You're bringing some really good people up there now. You look at the top 10 in the world right now, the top 15, the American guys that are in the top 15. It's strong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is strong. So, you know, Phil is 40. Let's see, Tiger's 42, so Phil's 40. Can he be that old? Phil is like 44. 46, 47? Wow.
No, and not only that. Look at this. I mean, Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, that's a three. Ricky Fowler, four. Brooks Koepka, five. You have Matt Kuchar, six. Then you have even Pat Perez is above him right now, seven. Charlie Hoffman, eight. Patrick Reed is going to be there, nine. Xander Schauffele, 10. Kevin Kisner, 11. Brian Harman, Daniel Berger, and I haven't said Phil Mickelson yet. Kevin Chapman, Phil Mickelson.
Yeah.
You have 16 players ahead of him right now.
There's just too many guys. You know, it just doesn't work. I think he was real lucky to get picked this year, this last time. And, we'll see. It's going to be interesting. I mean, there's going to be so much to talk about next year, Carlos, so much to watch. You know, just these 10 stories alone, they're all continuing. It's not like these are one and done. These are things that are going to continue, and we love talking about them. We love watching them. It's great fun, but I tell you, this PGA Tour thing with Tiger, it's a whole new mix. It has a whole different feel for me. How about you?
Oh, definitely. I mean, and looking in retrospective at 2017, I think that 2017 has been a setup right now for what we can expect, not only on the guys, but the ladies. Like I mentioned, it was the first time ever on 2016 that five players averaged under 70, and 12 averaged this year. Lydia Ko is on her way back. She's showing back to form, or at least getting there. Adia Utanagar ended the season on a great note. She's on her way back up. Right now, the leader right there is Chongqing Feng, but she's playing lights out. Don't get me wrong. But Lexi Thompson, like we said, she's there, right, ready for the taking. Sung Young Park, Soyeon Ryu, even Inge Shawn, Anna Nordqvist still playing great. IK Kim, Christy Kerr won a couple of times. Yeah. We're talking about the depth of the players there in the rankings right now. After that, you can say Inbae Park, who's still around and playing good, and maybe next year she'll be back playing great. Seo Kim. And I still haven't talked about Brooke Henderson, Charlie Hall, or even Georgia Hall that is coming back now to the States to play. Yeah. There's Stacey Lewis, who always plays great. Danielle Kang, who won her first major. Michelle Wiegand, if she has a healthy year, she can be there as well. Ike Kim was the winningest player there last year. So there's a lot of players on the LPGA prime to not only challenge Lexi and Chan Chang and Sung Young and Soyeon Ryu, they're primed to win majors and be on the top. So when you move now to the top of the players, Dustin Johnson had that back injury that really derailed him. Jason Day also had an injury, and of course the problem with his mom that he had to take off, but he's also on his way back. Hideki Matsuyama was poised to have a great year, then he had that issue that he revealed. It was that I was having a kid. Who even knew that he was married? And so John Rahm is coming to the scene. Justin Rose doesn't seem like he's slowing down. Ricky Fowler is playing great as well. As usual, he's going to be there. And, of course, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, the return of Tiger, Sergio. Hey, he'll be off of his honeymoon, I think. Now he'll be back next year playing better. Mark Leishman is on the rise. Paul Casey is out on a mission to make the Ryder Cup team and make it outright. Tyrrell Hatton was playing great as well at the end of the year. Tommy Fleetwood won the race to Dubai. And, hey, Tiger Woods, he's back. So there's a lot of players on both sides. Enough expectation to have a great season next year, not only through the majors, but only also looking forward in the ladies for the International Crown, which is going to be an interesting proposition now with all so many good players from different countries, but on the Ryder Cup. I can't wait and see who's going to be winning the majors. How about just you, Fred, some closing thoughts on this?
Yeah, let me just say this, Carl. Let me get into this before we go. There's the December issue of Ohio Golf Journal will be coming out tomorrow. So I want to let everybody know that this is a technology issue. I have several articles in there talking about technology and how it's affecting golf, the everyday golfer. So you want to look for that, Ohio Golf Journal. And also, Carlos, this is our last show of the year, as we mentioned. We won't be returning until January the 9th. We're going to miss everybody, but we're going to take a couple weeks off here and come back January 9th. Also, I want to mention that probably within the next 2 weeks, 10 days, something like that, we're going to come out with a special winter travel issue. We've got some resorts and things that we're featuring in Alabama and Florida different places. So you want to look for that. It'll be out the same places that the Ohio Golf Journal comes out. So send me an email, whatever, if you want to get. If you're not getting it and you want to get it, let me know. Just go to OhioGolfJournal.com and you'll be able to find those things. So, Carlos, for my final thoughts tonight, I really just want to again thank our listeners for sticking with us over the past few years. We want to thank all of our great guests who come on and really make Backline Report so much fun for me to do. I love the interviews that we get to do and the people we get to talk to. It's just great fun. I was going to thank Kieran, and I'm going to thank him anyhow, so I hope he's listening. But, Kieran, we want to always thank you. You stay up to the wee hours of the night in Scotland to come on our show when you're on, and you never complain or refuse to join us. You always bring so much to the show, and we certainly appreciate it. And, Carlos, you know, what can I say? Every week you do a great job of putting this thing together. In addition, you push all the right buttons and handle the technical stuff, and every once in a while we have a little follow-up or a little bump in the road, but you always seem to pull it back together. So we haven't – I don't think we've missed finishing one out yet in all these years. So it's good stuff, and I look forward every Tuesday night and just love talking about golf with Carlos and with Kieran and with the guys we have on the show. So watch for the December issue of Ohio Golf Journal tomorrow, and the winter travel issue will be coming out. And Carlos, whatever you've got, I got a short poem to close out with here, so whenever you're ready for that, let me know.
Go ahead. Let's do it before we close. All yours.
Okay. A winter's golf tale. 'Twas the week before Christmas, and all through the land, golfers were dreaming of the good rounds they'd had. JT was tucked all snug in his bed while visions of the FedEx Cup danced in his head. He'd had a great year, there can be no denying. The Wanamaker Cup Player of the Year, as well as $10 million, kept him smiling. Jordan was named Champion Golfer of the Year and was safely abed with the claret jug full of cheer. He'd hit a great shot from the practice ground at Birkdale to add a third major for turning 25 and becoming too stale. Sergio was wrapped in a jacket of green, never more to be majorless and depressed, it seems, when all of a sudden was heard a great clatter, every golfer strained to see what was the matter. 'Twas just the USGA PGA Tour and golf execs bemoaning the grand distances the golf ball traveled had them all fuming. Gary, Jack, and Tiger all doth agree something must be done to limit the ball, you see. If Mike Davis and the USGA have their way, the pros will have to adapt to a shorter ball someday. All around the kingdom, golfers did shout in hopes that Tiger would return to knock it about. El Tigre did not play in 2017, but he's vowed to win more titles in 18. With great fanfare, he did exhibit his wares to set his aim and gave hope to golf fans everywhere more majors he would claim. So he chipped and he putted and he chipped some more. TW has vowed to go low on the weekends next year for sure. Steve Stricker was smiling with his President's Cup on the mantle. His team had vanquished the Internationals in a lopsided battle. He and Team USA are still drinking from the President's Cup with their eyes all a-twinkling. Nick Price feels changes need to be made or the Internationals will never be the same. The new commish, Jay Monahan, is tossing and turning. Even though 45 events offer millions in loot, viewership is down and sponsorship to boot. What's to be done about new TV contracts and such makes Jay continue dreaming of remedies too much. The PGA Tour hath given tour players great pleasure. With over $300 million in golf and treasure, tour wives are nagging their spouses to practice, lower those scores, and bring home more cabbage. 2017 was a fantastic golf year. How could 18 be better, I feared. An air in the glow of my TV, I saw Rory, Jordan, Justin, and little Ricky. 'Twill be a great season next year, too, you'll see. Merry Christmas to all, and to all a great golf year. Carlos, that wraps it up, buddy.
That was so well done. Are you going to publish that on the Ohio Golf Journal?
It's in the magazine. It's the last story in the Ohio Golf Journal. Yep.
That looking forward to it. I'll promote that. That was excellent. Hey, thank you for the opportunity to share with you week in and week out. I mean, like you, I always look forward to sharing with you and our back niners every week the golf news and doing it our style. And also thanks to Kieran again. I know he couldn't have be here. I know he would have been if he would have been able
He's
to.
He's got
to
be dying. So, you know he wanted to be here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not an end-of-the-year show without Kieran Clark. But, hey, we battled through it. We hope we did a great job for you guys and you enjoyed it. We certainly did and look forward to starting the new season in 2018, the new year, with a bang. And we'll certainly have Kieran to bring that preview to you. Back Niners, that's wrap up not only another week, but another year of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for always opening your doors on the radio or the PC or the phone, wherever you're listening to us. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to all our VIGs, our very important guests of every week that we had. Too many to mention right now, but thank you to all of them. All great interviews. Hope that we can have many of them back again with us and many new ones for you to have. Don't forget to join us again, not next Tuesday, but remember, it's going to be on January. We won't be back until the 9th. That's when we're going to be having our next show, January 9th at 8 p.m. Eastern here on Blocked Up Radio. If you want to listen to this show or check it out on iTunes or TuneIn, also remember Roku TV, we're available there. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. We wish you to be blessed, be happy, enjoy the great game of golf, have a great holidays. May God bless you. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. Happy golfing, everybody. Happy golfing and happy holidays.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to Nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Holiday music, shopping, and dining all at the Village at Allen on the south side of Stacy Road in Allen. Shop and dine at over 100 stores and restaurants from Super Target, Toys R Us, BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse, Uncle Julio's, and many more. Then see our holiday tree show every 15 minutes daily from 10 to 9, complete with music and 100,000 sparkling lights at the Grove. For a complete list of stores, visit the Village at Allen.com. The Village at Allen, for every side of you.